Yesterday, I was attending a satsang where the teacher was speaking about ego. And the whole topic was centered around a relationship and how the ego interprets a relationship and what dynamics takes place between people. So after the talk, there was a gentleman who questioned the teacher, and he questioned the concept of doership. And somehow he got a bit upset, which clearly showed that he was in a difficult position to accept this concept, because his argument was not to understand, but to reaffirm what he wanted to believe. And this can happen to most of us, where the pain is so severe that we do anything in our capacity to avoid the pain. So the ego finds a defense mechanism, and that defense mechanism can show up as intellectualization, which is precisely what that gentleman was doing. So he started explaining his own concept, his own idea of the way world he perceives, and he says, it is very difficult for me to accept this concept. Again, not to judge anybody, because there are a lot of factors that play into all of this. It is true that there are too many forces acting on us, and sometimes it is very difficult, very challenging for the ego to face itself. And that is why, you know, in the Sufi teachings, they say that sage is the one who has the courage to face his ego. But a fool is one who is concerned about other people's ego. So it clearly shows that even the sage does indeed have an ego. And the objective of the teaching of non-duality is not to kill the ego, because the killing of ego would mean killing of the biological organism, for we need ego to survive. Because if you see, there is a basic functioning aspect to the ego. When you are hungry, you have to feed yourself. The body creates sensation, and the ego comes up, takes the owner of sensations, says, I am feeling hungry, and then it has to, and then the mind works further to eat the food, get the food, whatever it is. Similarly, if somebody attacks us, say physically attacks us, let's say an animal attacks us, then it is the ego which creates the flight or fight response. Now, whether you will fight or you will flight, that depends on your conditioning. So in that gentleman's case, his own created perception of fear triggered a fight response. While the thing was that the teacher was calm, and the teacher kept on pointing to the same thing, to the one very basic fact, that what is it that you seek? What is it that you want? And the teacher asked him, are you at peace? To which the gentleman said, no, I am not at peace. I am conflicted. And the teacher further said that instead of going into all this intellectualization, that what is the nature of man, what should this be, what should that be, what does the scripture say, what does this say, that say, why don't you simplify the life and see things as they are? So if a pain is arising and one can see it as an actual phenomena, then there is no separation between what is being observed and the observer. Because the observer is seen as an object, just as the observed. This very simple understanding can cut off the egoic reactions which happen in our daily living. Because when there is no sense of personal doership, then it becomes clear that even the other is not the doer. And that is why the teacher was calm, because he knew that the reaction is coming from the ego which got triggered because of certain conditions. Like yesterday there was bad pollution in Delhi. Maybe he had a bad day. Maybe something the teacher said got him so triggered that he could not handle it. All his childhood conditioning, whatever happened in the past, all the images may have come in front of him and elicited that response. But generally the notion we hold in our relationships is that we think that we act with volition. Not only do we think that we act with volition, we also think that the others also act with personal volition. And that thought itself is the attempt of the ego to draw attention to itself. All the ego wants to do is to prove itself right. It is not interested in learning. It is not interested in understanding. So it rationalizes, it intellectualizes, it creates emotional reaction, anger, aggression, even passive aggression like sarcasm. It's all a defense mechanism. The ego is willing to get caught up in every mundane thing and create a reaction, rather than to stay still and look at what is happening. The ego cannot do that because it is scared. For ego to stay still is like death. And death is what is ego is most scared of. While the message or the teaching says that death is the true liberation. But again, that said, getting caught up in thinking and reacting is a normal part of human life. So it is not to create any negative thought towards that gentleman, because he was not acting volitionally. It was meant to happen that way for him. You see, some people have so much resentment in their heart, so much troubles in their heart, and due to their unfortunate circumstances, their nature, the forces of life they were subjected to, they do not get a chance to express themselves. Maybe as a child, you were told not to cry, not to show your emotions. that showing your emotions is a weakness. Now again, not to blame your parents or caretakers, because they received the same message and they simply passed on what was passed on to them. But you learned that. You learned that it is not safe for me to express myself. But now what has been happening? All of that anger, suppressed anger, that rage, it is there. It is hiding in the shadows within the unconscious. So every now and then it finds expression. Expression in the maladaptive behavior, like aggression, tantrum, passive aggression, sarcasm, roasting, these are all expressions of passive aggression, repressed anger. The only outlet for such emotions is to allow yourself to grieve, is to cultivate the ability to express yourself in the most genuine manner. Now again, it is not in one's control to do that. That is also to be known. But one can certainly try. When you learn to grieve, that is the most healthy way to let go of that repressed anger. Because tears wash everything away. But a majority of people, they live with this restlessness, with this anxiety, with these trapped emotions. There are loads, mountains and mountains of emotions in their heart. So much so that when they see another person expressing love, they immediately get triggered. The teacher was talking about peace and love. But one or two people got triggered because of that. For they cannot understand what love is. When you have never felt it, you don't know what it is. When you've never sat down all by yourself and observed, not observed, what is happening within you, what is taking place around you, when you don't have that awareness, then you cannot understand what love is. Even if the other person expresses love, you genuinely push them away. You don't want them near you because you feel scared. You feel scared of getting hurt. You feel scared of being taken advantage of. You feel scared of trusting the other person. You know, we always think that, oh, maybe there is some hidden motive behind what they're doing. Even if someone is genuinely nice and, you know, just complimenting us or showing us kind gestures, we tend to doubt them. Now, it is not that it is the external things which are creating all of this. It is all buried within us. So the first thing is not to blame yourself for having these kind of reactions, because this was never in your control. As a child, you are not in control of your life. You demanded honesty, authenticity from your parents. And your parents only gave you that much authenticity and honesty that they had. So there were certain validations which were your genuine need as a child, which were not taken care of. And now they are coming out as unhealthy expressions. Refusal to believe that there is something called peace, that there is something called love. Because I'm saying, because I was like that myself. A decade ago, if somebody spoke to me about peace and love, I would not have even listened to that person for a minute. When we are unaware and caught up in thinking, we do not listen. We just listen to what we want to listen, and we use the information to defend our own beliefs. And sometimes that defense is an attack on the other. All Advaita sages, starting from Ramana Maharishi, said that silence is the greatest teacher. That means when you find yourself, your mind, in a very restless state, just let that happen. Because eventually it will settle down. And once it settles down, then comes the clarity. Even in your daily living, you must have observed this. Like when you are in a panicky situation, people tell us to calm down. They say, calm down, calm down. Because a genuine conversation between two people can happen only when there is calmness in the environment. A genuine conversation between me and you can happen if you come and listen to me with full awareness. If you come with an agenda that let me see what he speaks, and then I will respond like this, or this is my belief, so I'm not going to listen to him. Then you're going to listen to what you just want to listen. Then you're going to interpret my words the way you want to interpret them. The ego distorts words. It distorts concepts. As I said earlier, the only thing ego wants is to prove itself right. And that is the reason for a majority of our conflicts in life, in relationships. We seek peace in relationships, but how can peace happen when we are conflicted on the inside? And this constant move to pinpoint others' fault, to criticize them, to blame them, condemn them, to tell them they are not good enough, it is all the defense mechanism of the ego to avoid facing itself. The ego does not want to face the ugliness of the image that has been created. It just wants to strengthen itself. The ego says that I want liberation, I want enlightenment, I want freedom from obsessive thinking. But is it not just another thought? So you say, I want to clear my mind, I want to free myself from all this obsessive thinking. So you say, okay, from tomorrow I will start meditating 6 hours a day. Now what you have done? In addition to your usual thinking, you have added one more thinking, that now I will do this so that I attain an objective, I attain an outcome, which is the peaceful mind. So you have not lost anything, but you have gained one thing, one more thought. You have created an expectation within yourself to quiet your mind. It is my desire to quiet my mind so that I feel satisfied, so that I feel happy. This is the nature of mind. This is the trick of the mind. And yes, while you are in meditation, for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, you will feel all the bliss. But the moment you get up, go about your usual routine, mix with people, what you will find is that again same conflicts, again same clashes, the same patterns will repeat again and again. So what has happened here? The mind has trained itself to remain quiet for a couple of hours. The mind knows the time. It knows that every day you sit from so and so time to so and so for meditation. So it will remain quiet at that time. But then again, the moment your awareness becomes low at any point, it will immediately, the ego will immediately rise up and unleash an attack. Now we have seen the futility of living this way. To this day, where so much spiritual literature, so much philosophy, so much material is available, we have wars. That means that we are still in that stage where the awareness has not happened for us. Of course, it is the will of God. It is this way that things are manifesting. But if one sees that the war out there, the violence that you see out there, the conflict that you see out there is not separate from what is within us. All the war is here inside. All the hatred, all the malice that we carry finds expression as war, as apathy towards environment, as pollution. But the ego will always pinpoint the other. The ego creates this division between me and the other. Me or the thinking mind is the ego. It will blame everyone else, but will not look at itself for what it is. And if it doesn't find any other object to blame, it will blame God. What kind of God is sitting up there in the high heavens, creating wars? That God is nothing but the projection of this ego itself. The ego has put attributes on the infinite and reduced it. Because the ego does not want to face itself. It cannot bear to see the ugliness of the image that has been created. But in silence, in stillness, there is no other option for the ego mind but to turn on itself. And this is what Ramana Maharishi calls self-inquiry. Because the basic fundamental question is, who am I? Who is this me that thinks of itself to be the doer of actions? Who is that other that I see is the doer of their actions? This question leads to a great revelation that cannot be expressed in words. It brings about a great insight. It is not that the ego is killed after this question. Ego cannot be killed. Till you are alive, the ego remains. It is just that the ego is restored to its basic functioning state, to take care of the mind-body organism, this vehicle that has been given to us by nature. And it is important. It is essential task. That is why the ego is there. Because without the ego, there cannot be any communication between you and me. But when the ego wants to expand in horizontal time by creating desires, desires of attaining, becoming, attaining material wealth, attaining enlightenment, becoming sage, becoming monk, becoming this, becoming rich, becoming that, becoming a good person. All of it is a projection. Everything is a projection on the screen of consciousness. And Ramana Maharishi said that you are not the characters that you play. You are simply the screen of consciousness. The other day, I received an email from someone who was quite conflicted by the idea of spirituality. Because he was given a lot of concepts. Concepts like he has to get up early in the Brahma Mahurat, which is very early in the morning, let's say 3 a.m., starts around 3 a.m. onwards. And then he has to meditate for 3-4 hours and then perform other rituals and all. Now, I say it's okay. It's an individual's choice if they want to do that. But this man has family to take care of. He has his children and wife. And now the problem is that his spiritual life is interfering with his daily living. The children says that he does not give them time. And perhaps he does not have the time for wife as well. And his ideas are not acceptable by the family, because the family is facing the brunt of that. So I told him that the objective of this message of non-duality is not to separate you from life. It is to integrate into the life as harmonious, as peacefully as possible. The moment you think that you are on the path of discovery for a God or an idea of God that is separate from this life, you are creating a world of pain for yourself. The God is not apart from the world. Nisargadatta Maharaj said that the reality is in the objectivity. You may go to the mountains, sit in the caves and meditate for hours. Nobody is going to trouble you. But then what is the use of such a life? Of course, you can do it if you want to. Eventually, you will have to find somebody. Because you cannot remain cut off for long. Nobody remains cut off for long. Even Ramana Maharishi went to Arunachala, lived there for many years. And then eventually people found him and he started an ashram. And then he started imparting his wisdom to his followers. So there was an integration back into life, into the daily world, into the daily living. And then there were concerns like taking care of ashram and, you know, doing all the formalities that are needed to run an ashram. So, even Ramana Maharishi himself said that you may run off to the caves, meditate in the mountains, but how are you going to separate yourself from the mind? You are going to take the mind along with you. And the mind is going to haunt you. Now at least here you have people, you have the opportunity to speak to them. In the caves, who are you going to speak to? Who are you going to talk to? Now, for some people, this happens. They do stay in isolation for some time. I myself stayed in isolation for quite many years. But then, what I found in the end was that I have to find peace in this life, in what is happening here and now. There cannot be a God apart from here and now, apart from what is here, right now, here. And that is what led to peace. That is what ended the seeking. So the peace that I talk about is the pure presence which, when once seen, cannot be unseen. So even in that dynamic I was explaining earlier, where the teacher was speaking to that person who was irritated, the teacher was calm through and through, even when the other person was irritated, because the teacher had that awareness with him, the awareness of being. Once you see the being, you become the being. But when you get lost in thinking, when you get carried away in thinking, then the mind becomes turbulent. And there is fear at the root of it. There is pain. There is emotional distress. So in that, you know, I say that if something is too troubling, then take whatever help is necessary. Therapy, speaking to people. But yes, in the end, you will have to integrate back into this life. If you really want to see God, you have to see God as this world. The world is God, and God is the world. There is no separate God apart from this. And the God shines within you as the eye. What takes you away from God is I am this, I am that. What brings you back to God, relatively speaking, is simply I am. So the masters, the sages, the teachers have shown us through their experience, and they tell us that you don't have to believe our words. Now, I don't consider myself to be a teacher or anything, but I have experienced a lot of peace. Only the one who has experienced peace can talk about it. Only the one who has felt love can talk about it. And from that experience, I say that it is possible. That is the reason why I create these videos. That is the reason why Advaita teachers talk about it. Because when you see oneness, it is a command. All you can do then is talk about one. Nisargadatta Maharaj said that it is so pleasurable to talk about one. There is no other way. But the thing is, this message is not giving you a technique, a method. Because there is no way to be. You can only be. If I tell you a way to be, then that is to be this or that. Being means simply resting in your most natural state and observing what is happening around you. In a state of awareness, sometimes that observation will be distorted. And sometimes the observation will become the watchfulness or witnessing. It is not in our control how and when that happens. But whenever that happens, that is grace of God. Because in witnessing the change, the true change happens. Because the ego gets to realize its own illusory nature in witnessing. Because the nature of ego is effort. So you cannot change yourself through effort. Only in the silence, in the complete effortlessness, the change happens. The most covert aspects of ego get destroyed in witnessing. All the covert narcissistic traits, they come to light in awareness. While that gentleman who was speaking to the teacher, he expressed himself, his anger. I'm sure there would be many others in the satsang who would have the same thoughts, but they didn't find the outlet. Which is equally damaging. That is why I say grief is one of the healthiest ways to release trapped emotions. But you see, we get so trapped by this sense of individualistic, separate existence, and we create so much shame for ourselves that then that ego becomes the defense mechanism to protect that image. You don't have to destroy the image, you have to simply see what is happening. Once witnessed, the image dissolves. That is what the teaching says. So you don't have to, in other words, concern yourself with improvement, with becoming, not becoming. You simply have to watch and let the watchfulness happen. There is no way to witness. Witnessing is an impersonal happening. Jiddu Krishnamurti would say, look, sir, look. He never told us how to look, what to look at. He just said, look. Bible says, be still and know that I am God. What can be simpler than that? But unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, because it is all the will of God. It happens this way that a majority of people get conflicted. So, the world truly will never be a peaceful place in that sense, because this part is duality. There is always balance. Yes, sometimes there will be more peaceful times, other times there will be violent times. And that has happened throughout in history. But what I say is that irrespective of what happens, there is a possibility of being peaceful in every circumstance. For that, one has to look inwards. One has to understand what is happening within us. To be able to reflect on the self requires courage. It requires faith. But if done, then definitely it brings a lot of peace. The peace will never be outside. Peace is our nature. Peace is what we are. It is on the inside. So once you see that, the boundary between the inside and the outside dissolves. The inner becomes the outer and the outer becomes the inner. The notion of a separate observer observing anything, that dissolves. Everything is seen as observed. The trinity of observer, observation, and observed becomes one. And one is all there is. It is not that our relationships will always be peaceful, that our relationships will always be harmonious. Life is not designed like that. There will always be conflicts in relationships. But when you have discovered the peace of your own being, you recognize the same being in others. The being is nothing but consciousness. And the recognition, the only recognition of that consciousness, brings about a sense of awareness, a sense of peace, which becomes the underlying factor. So irrespective of what is happening in your relationship with the other, you may experience emotional turmoils. There is no way to stop that. But none of it becomes your story. So I say that true awakening is the end of me and my story. Once the observer me is seen for what it is, then there is only the observed, which ends the separation between me and the other. And the end of separation is end of suffering.